Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Jared Van Eck, 34 years of combination experience, captain with the City of Spartanburg on Truck 62. Jared always wanted to be a firefighter from a very young age. He was able to get his start with Hawthorne Volunteer Fire Department in New Jersey, where he rose through the ranks to assistant fire chief before moving to South Carolina to pursue a career position. Jared found the career route a little later on in life, but for me, his mindset is what sets him apart due to the fact he knows with age, being physically fit, and wanting to train is not just for his benefit, but it's what the public expects from us when we show up. I truly hope the listeners tune in and hear a few nuggets Jared drops along the way. With that, I present Jared Van Eck.
Hi, I'm Jared Van Eck. I'm a captain with the City of Spartanburg Fire Department in the upstate of South Carolina. I have 34 years in the fire service. 23 of those are volunteer, and the last 11 have been career. I started my fire service career in the Volunteer Fire Department in Northern New Jersey, where I was born and raised. The Hawthorne Volunteer Fire Department is in Passaic County, borders Patterson to the north. We had a great department there that I was happy to be a part of for as long as I was. Transitioned to South Carolina, had a lot of family in South Carolina, always desired to be on the career side of it. Very tough to do in New Jersey. Very different up there. A lot more candidates. You had to put all your eggs virtually in one basket because due to the amount of candidates or people seeking the job up north, there were a lot of requirements, mainly residency. So, you know, if you were going after a particular department, you'd have to establish residency there. You may sit on a list for several years. So you're really kind of just, you know, waiting on that without the ability to do a whole lot else. A lot of family in South Carolina. So it was my aunt that said years ago, she says, why don't you come down here? And I probably should have listened to her back then and made a career of this a little bit sooner. I came down here, I was 42 years old. I'm 53 now.
Okay.
But as far as getting into the fire service, I think I've told the story before. I don't know how many people have heard it. You know, early on, I've always wanted to be a firefighter since I was, you know, knee high. And I don't think a lot of people remember many things from when they were really little, like age four, age five. But I do recall my grandfather putting me on a fire truck at about that age, age four or five. Now, nobody in my family was a firefighter. In fact, it's only recently that some other members of my family have gotten into, you know, the emergency services. My niece recently became a registered nurse. She's working in a NICU. And my nephew, my godson, he just graduated paramedic school outside of Chicago. So we've got a few more in the family that are in the emergency services now, which is great because we have good conversations now as well. But my grandfather put me on that fire truck. Really, it must have set something in motion at that point. And years later, I found out that fire truck that he, or that fire engine that he put me on, was engine three. And that's the fire company that I ended up joining in Hawthorne when I was finally able to. So that was kind of neat. And I found some older photos. Actually, I got this one right here. This picture was taken at a wet down. It's me, you know, 13 years old with those funky shorts and them real high socks, standing in front of engine three when it was brand new at a wet down. This was 1984. So again, you know, kind of destined to be a member of that fire company. But there was another event, probably a few years later, I was probably maybe 7 years old. My parents were going out and they dropped my brother and I off at my other grandparents' house. And as we came up the street, we weren't able to turn into the block because there was hose coming off a fire hydrant. It was laid out in the street. So my father parks the car and then we walk down the block toward my grandparents' house, and the house across the street was on fire. And I remember just standing on my grandparents' porch, just watching everything that was going on. And, they had taken out all the windows. There was smoke coming out of the windows. There was hose in the street. There were probably three or four fire trucks, fire engines in the street. And I remember standing there just saying, like, these guys are doing something really important. Like, something's going on here that's not good, and they're here trying to do something about it. So I think that probably had the biggest impression on me at that point, at that age. So, going on from there, I mean, I think I had a subscription to Firehouse Magazine when I was 12. I don't think you run into many kids who've got a subscription like that to a trade magazine, but I did. And I kind of always had it still in the back of my head. College, never really grasped onto it. I guess I was struggling a little bit. After high school, I tried military school. Was not really ready for it, I guess you could say at that point. So came back home, went back to work landscaping for my uncle, and my father's like, you need to go to college. So re-enrolled in college and still wasn't really feeling it. So it was at that point that I said, I always wanted to be a fireman. So that's when I pretty much decided, all right, I'm going to go down to this firehouse and I'm going to see what the process is to become a volunteer. So I don't, like I said, I'd been, reading Firehouse Magazine, and I was pretty like up to snuff on the terms on some of the equipment. So I go down to the firehouse. Meet some of the guys. Some of the guys, it turned out to be like the same age as me. I went to a private Christian high school, and these guys were local, so I knew who they were from playing ball in town and stuff. And they took me around a truck and they were showing me stuff, and I was just kind of rattling stuff off like, that's the booster reel, right? That's the deck gun. This is your supply line. So they're like, you're firing somewhere else? I'm like, no. No, I'm just really interested in what's going on here. So I had the opportunity then to join, and I signed on in March of 1991 as a volunteer, and just kind of took off from there. Took all the opportunities that I could that I knew about, and at that point, that early stages, compared to when I look at things now, I didn't have a clue back then. Not a clue. If I knew then what I know now, things would be so much different. But I went to all the drills. I was into the training. We did a lot of volunteer type things. Like, we did a lot of parades, and of course we always had the local town parade on Memorial Day and things like that. So we had fun. We fought some fire. Just a few years later, I caught the bug and I said, I want to do this as a career. So in that area of New Jersey, there are some career departments, but it's largely volunteer. So the assistant chief of my volunteer fire company at the time, he had a friend who was a firefighter in the city of Patterson. So he kind of arranged for me to go down there and do like a ride along, which was great. Patterson, I don't know if you're familiar with them, but they see a lot of work. Great fire department, fantastic history. If you go on to PattersonFire.com, look at their history. It's absolutely amazing. So they had a program as an auxiliary firefighter program, which morphed from the old civil defense program from back in the war years when guys were either enlisted or drafted, went off to war. They had other firefighters that came in and filled in, and those were your civil defense firemen. So they actually had a program that I was able to get involved with, and they assigned you to a tour. So Patterson had four tours of duty, and at the time they were working 10 and 14s. Eventually they transitioned to 24/72, and I was assigned to a company. I wanted to ride with the engine company that my assistant chief's friend was with. They already had an auxiliary firefighter, but they were in a dual house. They were in there with Truck 3, Ladder Company 3, and the 2nd Battalion and an ambulance. So I ended up riding, getting the opportunity to ride along with Ladder Company 3 for just about 3 years or so, and then the spot opened up on the engine. I moved over to Engine 5 and rode there for the remainder of the decade of the 90s, just working with some real salty old firemen, learning so many things, going to a lot of fires. Some of the best meals I ever ate were in that firehouse, man. These guys could cook, you know, like nobody's business. It was fabulous. And then from there, I just kind of worked my way up in the volunteer fire department, worked through, you know, being a driver and then to a lieutenant, eventually a captain, got involved with training on the department level, and then I moved up to assistant fire chief. On the board of fire commissioners, and you know, we would develop and administer policy for the fire department, you know, work in the incident command role. And that's the rank that I left. I was the senior assistant chief when I left Hawthorne and moved to South Carolina to take the job with C. Spartanburg. And I had I had a pretty good plan coming into the city of Spartanburg. I said, all right, great. I said, you know, I'm starting over. And I believe I came in with the right attitude. I was totally great with that. I said, hey, this gives me the opportunity to do some fireman stuff, ride backwards, you know, for a few years and do that. But, you know, all good plans eventually meet, you know, another need, I guess, is the right way, you know, to talk about it. Like since I had been a driver, within 6 months, they had me in the relief driver program because they need relief drivers. I think at that time I was on A shift and we only had one relief driver. So, you know, there went that plan kind of out the window, but it was all good because I, you know, started to learn, you know, more things. You get a better familiarization with the streets and the hydrant locations when you're actually out there driving instead of just, you know, riding backwards, looking at it. Makes you pay attention a little bit more. So from there, our next move up is to sergeant or engineer. I was able to test into that role in the minimum amount of time. You had to be there 2 years. You had to be a relief driver for a year. So literally right after I hit my 2 year mark, I was promoted to sergeant through our promotional process. And I was able to stay at that rank for about 4 years and probably, arguably, the best position in the fire department is to be in that sergeant engineer role. Because we have the opportunity to, you get to drive, so you're responsible for your apparatus. You get to ride up as the officer in the absence of your company officer, and you're going to fight some fire, you know, because you go on automatic aid, or if you arrive, you know, second or third due, you're going to work. Our engineers did not stay with the apparatus unless they were pumping, so you were going to work. So, you know, I was in that position for right about 4 years, and just I was able to focus on a lot of developmental things for myself in that time. I took the promotional process for lieutenant and was promoted, got a spot on one of our busiest engine companies, Engine 63, and stayed there for a couple of years. Got moved around a little bit. And then the promotional process for captain came up 2 years ago. We're coming up on the 2 year mark this week. And took that and came out well again. And the powers that be kind of switched things up a little bit. So they took the truck lieutenant and they took me, the engine lieutenant, and they swapped us. So I've been with Truck 62 now for the last 2 years as the captain. And that kind of brings us you know, to where we are right now.
Okay. Was it a difficult transition to leave home, pack your bags, and start over? I always like to ask firefighters who start over. That way, it, you know, because there are other firefighters out there who might be thinking the same thing, like, man, like I have this opportunity. I don't really want to, but it always helps if they can hear somebody else's experiences.
Yeah, great question. I do get asked that quite a bit. And for me and my family, it was a good move. Like I mentioned, we have a lot of family here in South Carolina. So that made the transition very easy. You know, and then there were other factors as well. I just felt that you know, at the full-time job that I had, I worked for an oil company for 23 years or 22 years. And it was a great, you know, they were a great company. They were a family-owned company, not my family, and they took care of us pretty well. And I was bestowed with a lot of responsibility, but no authority to really, you know, do anything, make any change. And a lot of the employees that worked there, like literally, they had been there for 30, 40 years. And most of them, unfortunately, did not get the opportunity to retire. They actually passed away, you know, while still actively being employed. So it just came to the point where it's like, okay, you know, it's time. If I really want to do this, I'm 42. I do want to do it. I felt I was in pretty good shape to be able to handle that. So through the whole process of, you know, come to the decision with my wife and actually making the move, selling the house. I came down to South Carolina 6 months ahead of them because it was my daughter's senior year in high school, and there was no way I was pulling her out, you know, mid-year after she had gone through the entire school system. So we sold the house. My wife moved in with her parents and the kids. I came down to South Carolina, lived with my aunt and uncle for 6 months. In the meantime, you know, we found a house that we wanted to buy, and then at the end of the school year, they moved down and we moved in. So throughout that entire process, never hit one glitch with anything, selling the house, with money, with, you know, the kids, you know, just like most kids, you know,
Yeah,
that's a big change. So there was a little angst there. But other than that, I mean, I believe it was what we were meant to do. Just because of that, we did not hit a single snag.
And so it brings me on to the next topic. You got your start career-wise a little bit later in the game. You know, from a volunteer standpoint, you started early, but transitioning to career was a lot later in life. So, how important was your physical fitness in correlation to having to do? I'm assuming you did some sort of recruit academy.
So when I came down, let me answer the physical fitness part of that first. Yeah, I mean, I had made an effort, you know, years prior to coming down here to kind of ramp it up. I mean, I was always kind of on and off, you know, coming up through my 20s and into my mid-30s. Like, you know, I would go through spurts and do a whole bunch of stuff, and then I would kind of fall off a little bit. But you know, at that time, I was doing all the Tough Mudders, the Spartan races. You know, I was going to the gym on the daily. One of the guys I worked with, we did all those races together. On the weekends, we would go up to the mountains and we would just run trail. So that was a huge factor in just being able to, you know, jump in with a bunch of younger people. But I came with the pro board certifications. So the chiefs at the time, they didn't really see any need for me to go back through a fire academy. But I was willing to do that. Like, I came in with that mindset that, hey, if I need to go back through a academy, however long it is, like, I am prepared to do that. I didn't have, you know, any second thoughts about it.
So with that being said, you hit on how, and I liked how you hit on it because when it comes to physical fitness, working out, everyone's different. Everyone's going to have their different motivations or their different disciplines. But one thing I love that you hit on was the fact that you were like, you were conscious of it, but it wasn't always constant. And then I think at some point in everyone's life, something will click where you'll make it a constant, even if you don't want to do it. Because most people I talk to, like, they don't really enjoy, like, all right, it's hot outside, I'm going to go do a quick 30, 40 minute AMRAP in gear. Like, that's not really like something we're like, oh, yes, I get to go do it. But it's just something in your mind, your mindset is, hey, regardless of what conditions are out there, I'm going to do this.
Yeah, and that's the discipline that you need to develop. And I think, and it does take time. I mean, that's a very big point that we make to the recruits is that, okay, you're in a 9-week academy. You can stay motivated for 9 weeks to make it through. But what about after that? So the point that we make is we try to get them to develop the discipline, start developing that discipline in that 9 weeks so that they have that to carry with them afterward. Because that, we've heard it a million times. This is a marathon. It's not a sprint. And you have to treat it that way. But you're always constantly working. You're steadily moving forward and you're always constantly working. Some days are not great days, but you still show up and you do something. Like again, like today was hot. We had a rough night last night, like we talked about, but I got on the Echo bike for an hour, in the garage this morning. Hot as hell, but it just needed to be done, needed to be done.
Right. No, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's, the key thing is discipline, because motivation only gets you so far. And like you said, like anybody can motivate themselves to get through an academy. And usually you leave the academy probably in great shape. But I remember seeing that adage a while back, don't let your time in the academy be the best time when you're in shape. You know what I mean? Like, don't let it slip once you leave and you get assigned a crew in a station and you're on a truck and all of a sudden your physical fitness starts going down.
Yeah, I mean that is our hope, at least with what we're trying to do for the recruits. So our fitness cadre at the city, we're all IAFF peer fitness trainers. We go out, to the academy, the county academy, and we were given that opportunity to train the recruits, and we PT them 3 days a week, and we start out with a presentation that we developed on the. Usually the first or the second morning. And then we put them through a baseline to kind of see where they're at. We have them do basically a half a mile or 800 meters. And then they do 4 rounds of 20 air squats, 20 hand release push-ups, and 10 burpees. Hit that 4 rounds and then do another 800 meters. And we cap it at 30 minutes. And then we run that same test back at the end of week 8. So, in the presentation, we tell them right off the bat, in a perfect world, you come into this fire academy already in pretty decent shape. And then we teach you how to condition yourselves for the job going forward. But now let's talk about reality. Most of them come in not in very good shape. I mean, we do have some guys that come in there pretty stout, been doing CrossFit or whatever, and that's great. But generally they're not. So it's definitely a bit of work. Some people have, other than in their gym class, maybe haven't done a push-up, haven't done an air squat, don't run, on a regular basis. So it's a shock to the system. But again, we explain to them, like, the stuff that we're going to put you through is not ego driven. Like, we're not here as a bunch of, macho, whatever, just making you jump around and do all kinds of shit because we can. Everything has a purpose. Everything is designed that way so that you are able to function the way you need to on the fire ground when people are counting on you. And we take that, the whole way. We talk to them about, all right, well, who's counting on you? Well, first of all, it's the citizens, right? Because that's why we're here to begin with. They probably don't even know that they have an expectation for you, but they do. Your crew, they're counting on you to pull your weight, right? And make sure you're able to do your portion of the work. And then you've got your family, right? You want to come home to your family. So they are essentially are counting on you. So we tell them, look to your left, look to your right, look in front of you, look behind you. Say your fitness and their fitness are going to have some effect on you.
Right.
And we kind of carry that through. And as they start their fire training, a couple weeks in, we ask them, we're like, hey, are you starting to notice a difference? Is your endurance up? Is your stamina up? And the majority of the answers are yes. And then by the end of the program, we say, all right, so, honestly, what did you think? Because we need that feedback because, I mean, we're not perfect. We didn't have everything figured out from the beginning. So we need feedback to make improvement. And the majority say that they've benefited from it. Now, on the other side of that, I know there are some because they've reached out, contacted me, but have taken that with them and continued to do those things that they know they should be doing. But it's hard to grab any data on that and find out,
Yeah.
how many people stuck with it once they got on the job, and how many people said, ah, I'm just gonna hope for the best.
Yeah. Which we all know there are a lot of those hoping for the best type firefighters out there. But no, I mean, definitely awesome, statements and targets when it comes to physical fitness and becoming a firefighter. So my next question for you is, at what point in your career, it's actually a two-parter, at what point in your career did you decide to start moving up towards the company officer role and why?
So on the you talking like on the volunteer side or the career side or both?
Actually, you could correlate them to both, yeah.
So obviously things are a little bit different on the volunteer side because you need to be elected into those positions. We didn't have any type of testing process. So automatically, that defaults to a popularity contest in some cases. But I would like to think that I was elected to that first position as a lieutenant, because of my work ethic, what I showed that I believed in, because there's a lot of people that they like to talk that talk, but they don't have a whole lot to back it up. It's one thing to talk about it, but you need to go out and do it. Not so other people can see it, but just because if it came out of your mouth, you better be backing it up with something. And the only way to do that is through your actions. So, I felt that I had something to offer, right? I felt that I brought something to the table. I had good ideas. I was very, adamant about the training. There was a core group that trained a little bit more often than just the Monday nights that we would go down to the firehouse. We would show up sometimes on Saturdays or Sunday mornings, and we would go out and do some other stuff as well, train drivers, do some pumping, go through PDPs. And then, moving into that first role and starting to go to officers' meetings and just finding a little bit more about, how the department works, and then figuring out how you could influence the direction that the department was going to go was very, intriguing to me because again, I felt I had something to offer to that would benefit not me, but the other members and of course the citizens, which is, the whole reason why, we do what we do.
Right.
So, working all the way up to the level of assistant chief was, a great experience. It was also, there were some trying experiences because at that level, you just sometimes you get shit coming at you from every direction.
Right.
But had a pretty good support group. The fire chief that I served under as assistant chief, he's a very good friend of mine, and we navigated a lot of stuff, over the years. And then, moving into the career side, that was, kind of on my mind all along, is that, like I said originally, I was going to ride backwards for a few years and then eventually move up. And that just happened a little bit quicker than I thought it would initially. But again, it's kind of the same reasons. Like, I believe I have the skill set, the abilities, and I bring some good things to the table that will help move us, in a good direction.
So with that being said, you're now a company officer for a career department. What does leadership look like to you, and what kind of leader did you want to become once you received that title?
So leadership, there's a couple different facets to leadership. I've always thought, that leadership was that guy on the front line saying, "Follow me."
Okay.
Right? But throughout the years, that kind of, changed a little bit to what that looked like. And I thought a lot about how I try to fit into that role. So when I looked at, what that meant for me, I wanted to be the person that set the right example. And like I mentioned before, it's one thing to talk about things, and being a leader, but where's that the action to back that up? So your leader has to have good character. They have to have integrity. Need to have some balls, because you need to be able to stand up, against things that are just not right. Things that maybe need your influence to take a different direction. So you really can't be afraid to deal with those things, the hard issues. But I kind of viewed myself as, yeah, I'm going to be the one who kind of jumps out in front first. And says, "All right, I'll do this. Probably gonna screw it up, but at least you can learn from what I'm about to screw up here, and then you can do better."
Right.
Because that's probably one thing that, having the opportunity to train a lot of the personnel that I work with as recruits, and see some of them come up and now they're working at the level of sergeants and engineers. I said, "My job as the company officer and as your instructor is to make you a better engineer now than I ever was. If I'm able to accomplish that, then I think I've done what I'm here to do." So that's been kind of my mentality all along.
And what I like is you mentioned two things. You're going to go first as a leader. And secondly, you might mess up. And I think that's where the fire service, some individuals have that issue of, I hold the rank as lieutenant, sergeant, captain. If I go first and I mess up, like people are going to see this, my crew's going to see this. And it's like, so, like, we're all human. Nobody gets things done perfectly. Like, I don't think there's ever a situation where the fire ground's ever perfect. There's always things you can take away from. Hey, I threw this ladder. I could have done it a little bit better this way. I stretched this line. I could have stretched it. You know what I mean? Like, I
Agree.
understand practice and repetition and proficiency, but not everything's going to be done 100% correct. As long as it gets done, nobody gets hurt. To me, that's a win. But also go back. If you have GoPros and footage, like, hey, yep, right there is where I messed up. Or when I was masking up, I didn't do it this way like I normally do. But I love that you mentioned the fact that you're going to go first and you might mess this up. No better learning experience for, like, if you were my captain and I'm watching you and I'm like, oh, he messed up. Oh, hey, we're human. Like, all right. So if I mess up, like, it's not a big deal. But I think we're so. I'm trying to figure out the word. Like, I feel like the fire service is like, well, I don't want to look bad in front of this group or my department. As long as it's in training, that's where you should mess up to learn to get better.
Yeah, so culturally, I think we've been kind of programmed that, like, if you're the leader, if you're the captain, the lieutenant, whatever, like, you are supposed to be the master of all the things,
That's right.
you know, and you're supposed to have all the answers. And when you show up on a scene and there is some outlandish shit going on that you've never seen before, people just expect, well, captain knows what to do. And I think that's just, you know, culturally, that's what we've been brought up under. So that's where, like, the kind of ego gets in the way. It's like, hey, man, I'm supposed to have all the answers here, and I'm really not sure what's going on. So I'm going to kind of step back because I don't want to make it look like I don't know what I'm doing, right? I mean, I think that's kind of where maybe it comes from.
But it's that humility that you have, and I hope other officers have it, because the fire service, it's so vast and wide of like things, the calls we go on, the things that the public expects us to do. And it's like you can't put everything on one man or woman to go, hey, whatever situation, you got to figure it out. So it's like, what I love is that's why your crews, if everybody brings a certain skill set to the table, it's like if I'm a company officer, or you're the company officer, I'm one of your firemen. We get called for, I don't know, something electrical, some sort of electrical issue in an HVAC unit. You don't really have any experience in HVAC, and but you're like, hey, Danny on the side, he does HVAC. Hey, listen, this is what we got. What would you do? Like, to me, that number one, that gets buy-in, that gets the guys to go like, hey, look at that. Like, cap's not all about, I'm the captain, you got to listen to me. You're asking me, hey, what would you do? You got some knowledge in this. Take the lead on it. I'll be there with you. Not saying that I'm going to run the whole thing, but cap, this is what's going on. This is what we need, blah, 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 X, Y, Z. And then you're like, got it. Like, to me, that's what makes a crew great, is because there's so many different skills that we all have, that when we can come together, and then if the officer can realize that or know that, then that's what makes the fire service and crews as a whole awesome.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's the crew resource management principle right there, is that everybody has something to contribute to the team, you know, and then that goes back to knowing your personnel, right? Those are the people that you've been put in charge of. But as a company officer, it's your responsibility to get to know them so that you can tap into these things that are going to benefit the whole team. You
Facts,
know, because
yes.
if you never make the effort to talk to people and find out what their background is, you know, and you kind of set that tone, like, you know, I'm the captain and do what I say, you may show up at that HVAC incident and he may be too afraid to say anything, even though he may have that knowledge and experience because of the tone that you set. So if you go the opposite direction there and say, you know, take that time to get to know your crew and everything that they have to offer, you're gonna have jam up crew, and you're gonna excel. You know, you're gonna become you develop that synergy. You know, everybody's got something to offer, and then you become that go-to crew. You know, and that's something that I enjoyed, you know, years ago, and you know, just being on that crew that the chief looked for. You know, because I think generally, you know, the firemen that are go-getters, you know, they want the work. So by putting in that effort, like, you want to be on that go-to crew, right? Because when the chief needs something done, you want to be the one he calls. You want to go in and do the work.
Definitely, definitely. In your opinion, what does the term aggressive mean to you?
So I can't remember who explained it this way. This is not mine, but I like it. So when you talk about firefighting, right, you got the word fight. It's right in there. It's kind of aggressive, is kind of baked in the cake. Like, you shouldn't have to say aggressive firefighting because it's a fight, man. You're in it. So we're doing what needs to be done to get the outcome that we desire. So, you know, aggressive gets sometimes a bad connotation. I know some chiefs don't like to hear that word, but I mean, when you think about firefighting in general, what's really passive about it, right? I mean, you're ripping some hose off the truck, you're moving across the front lawn, you hammer this door open, and you go inside, and you're whipping that nozzle around, knocking back some fire. I mean, that is pretty aggressive. It's not like we're walking up, knocking on the door, saying, "Hey, can I come in, with my garden hose here?" It's not that.
Right.
Now, some of the other things that we do, in the course of our day, we do building inspections, we do programs, we talk to our citizens. Now, obviously, those are more the more passive aspect of what we do. But the aggressive side, but it also has to have some kind of control to it. It has to have some education and even a little bit of experience behind it. Like you're when you come up to force a door, how are you approaching that? Are you sizing it up as you come? Or are you just running up to this door, taking a big old baseball swing, without even trying the knob, and just slamming your way in? Or, like I said, are you sizing this thing up? Inward swing, outward swing, wood jam, metal jam, wood door, metal door. Did we try before we pry? It comes down to that, just being smart in order to kind of affect that level of aggressiveness.
100%. Okay. This is a different question, but I want to ask because you've been a volunteer a lot longer than you've been career, and it's not a shot or anything, because to me they're both the same. Whether you get paid or not, we should all be able to agree that volunteer firefighting and career firefighting, same thing. It's just we're putting either people are getting paid or they're not, or we're just putting a label on things. But with that being said, what do you see that we can do better for the volunteer side as far as recruitment? Because I'm sure you've seen from Jersey to South Carolina, two different dynamics going on. So what improvements can you see that we could do better to entice or get more individuals to volunteer? Because the numbers have shown it has drastically declined.
I mean, that's a great question. I haven't paid a whole lot of attention to the volunteer fire service here in South Carolina. I worked for part-time for a couple other accommodation fire departments that did have some volunteers. Typically, they were older gentlemen, older than me. And they would come out in a support role. They weren't pulling a line and going in the front door. They weren't, throwing a ladder, doing some window initiated search, but they were still involved. And I think that is one of the beauties of the volunteer fire service, is that there is a job for everyone. So like I said, I talk with my buddy Joe. He's still the fire chief up in Hawthorne. And they're still meeting big challenges. That middle age, well, not middle age, but that like mid 20s to mid 30s bracket, even when I was there, it didn't exist. I had some like 21 and 22-year-olds. I was probably 35 at the time. And then we had some guys who were in their late 40s into their 50s. So like we were missing that gap. And I think with the generations that are moving up, like they are looking at different things to do with their lives, whether it be professional or whatever. But like I said, I've talked to Joe, and they've tried, they're trying incentives, they're trying to convince mayor and council to give, tax breaks, because it's just wickedly expensive to try to, move into one of these towns. Right. And if you are able to afford the house, well, you got to be working to pay that mortgage. How much time do you have to be a volunteer? And it's like every time we talk, and he's like, "I don't know, Jared." He says, like, it's going to be going away. He says, eventually, they're going to have a, either a combination or a paid force here, because, I think he said they're down to like 92 members I mean, when I was there, there was 115, 120 members. So it's steadily dropping. But a couple of the good things that he did as a fire chief, like I said, the volunteer fire department has a job for everyone. We had a fire desk that would go in service when we got a call. So our police would dispatch us and they could, run it as they needed to. But we had a fire desk that, a firefighter could come up and man and handle all the radio transmissions and the making notifications, for mutual aid or whatever. So we tapped into a group of ham radio operators. These guys know radios. They love to be on the radio and they know how to talk on the radio. So the chief brought them in and, we schooled them up on the fire service end of it. And now we didn't have to take somebody that could be responding out of a fire truck to man this desk. We got a whole group of ham radio operators. And he made them members of the fire department. And that didn't come without a little pushback from some people as well, because they weren't firefighters in the traditional sense. But they were members providing a valuable service in the volunteer fire department, and we had a wonderful ladies auxiliary, and they were a very integral part of our fire department. They ran a lot of fundraisers for us, and they came out to every fire scene and had pretty much everything you possibly needed, while you were out there fighting this fire. So many opportunities, but to try to keep these, your frontline responders who are jumping on the truck and going to the call and are going to mitigate the problem, that's still a tough one. The answer, I don't know if the answer is even out there. A lot of things have been tried, that they're talking about maybe getting to pay per call as an incentive to get guys to come out. I know there's one or two fire departments up that way that are doing that currently. And then there's also the auto aid route, which when I left there, that wasn't a thing. Everybody still has their own fire department, but now you have fire departments that are co-dispatching with each other and responding to their areas as well. So I wish I knew what the answer was, because it's definitely an issue.
No, it's funny you mentioned that. So, I'm from Rockland County, so not too far from you. So when I became a volunteer, it was like strictly volunteer, your own time, your own dime, run the calls, things like that. And then what was funny was when I moved down here, immediately I was like, I gotta find a volunteer department. And I got one, I got on. And I remember at the end of the year, like when I went a full year of actually volunteering, from September to December, usually at the end, they gave me an envelope. And I was like, okay. And I opened it up and it was a check. And I'm like, what's this check for? And they're like, oh, that's call reimbursement. For every call you ran, we tallied it. This is how much you got paid for each call. And I was like, for real? It was like, I'm from. Like when you volunteer, and they're like, no, well, this is an incentive for gas for people taking their time, and so I understand, and I start seeing like some of these departments are starting to do that, but like coming from when I started, when you were volunteer, you were truly volunteer, but nowadays with everything being so expensive, people having to work, from what I'm gathering too, the curriculum, the training, the number of hours you have to have, like some people are just between family time and actual work, they can't do it. So I
Can't
know
fit
where
it in.
back like where I was from, that auto aid thing, that's a thing now, because before it was your respective department gets toned out and communications will give you a certain amount of time and then they'll retone. But now it's like you're getting your department and the next closest, and hey, whoever responds, responds. And that's just how we have to do it now in 2025.
So we did have some incentives. Our fire, the Hawthorne Volunteer Fire Department gives a clothing allowance at the end of the year, provided that you've made, I believe the cutoff is still like 33 and a third percent. Like you have to make that or better in order to get that. And then there was a little bit more of a bump for company officers and assistant chiefs. And then boy, I don't know how many years ago, but they came up with LoSAP, the Length of Service Awards Program. So that was an annuity that was, given to by the borough, and it was put into a deferred annuity account, almost like a 401k or something that you could draw off of when you retire out. So but even that, that's not enough anymore. I mean, I want to say that the clothing allowance when I first started was maybe scratching 200 bucks. And this is back in 91, 92. And then when I left as an assistant chief, I mean, I was maybe getting like 1500 or 1700, for the year. So it was nothing to sneeze at, but it was something.
Something. No,
Yeah.
understood. Understood. Okay. when it comes to outside training, how important is it for the individual to get outside their own four walls of their department and see what else is going on? New innovations, new technology, new strategies and tactics.
I think it's very important because when you're strictly working within your own bubble, you're not getting influence from anywhere else because things are dynamic, right? They're always changing. And especially, in the fire service, guys are very innovative. They're coming up with not necessarily new ways, but better ways. The only way to do that is to get out and go see what they are. And with that being said, I understand that a lot of people don't have that opportunity. They're not given that opportunity. And I'm just very grateful that, my fire department does give us those opportunities. They pay us to go to outside training. And we can bring back. We've brought back so much. I mean, all of our personnel that have attended conferences up and down the East Coast and a little bit toward the West. I mean, we've brought back so many things that have influenced changes in our department, for the better. And of course, you're always going to have, a little bit of pushback. Because we like the way things are and we hate change, which is pretty much a general statement for firefighters, but it has improved the way that we do things. So every opportunity that I get, I take advantage of it. Going back to my days in the volunteer fire department, I was aware of a few outside trainings and conferences, but really didn't have the opportunity, because first of all, we had no budget for that. Like, if I was going to go, it was definitely going to be on my own dime. Didn't make a whole lot of money at that time. Had two young girls, and my wife still travels extensively, but she was traveling extensively back then for her job. So I was kind of like in the Mr. Mom role, bringing the kids to school or to daycare and making their lunches and picking them up after. Because that the company that I worked for was right in town, and my firehouse was across the street. So, and my parents lived in the same town. My in-laws were one town over. So I had a very short little radius there that I was, kind of working within. So like I didn't really have the ability to take advantage of these opportunities. So now, anytime I can get out, and work on career development, I do that. And a couple of years ago, I think about 4 years ago now, I was given the opportunity to work with Chief Isaacson on the CFT Green Team, doing support roles for all the conferences. And that has just been an amazing opportunity. You get to network with so many people from all over the country. I've made some really great friendships, everywhere from, Wisconsin, California, Texas, even to right here in South Carolina, and not just the national instructors, not like the Mike Champos and the Ray McCormicks. I mean, it's great being able to sit down and talk with those guys, but the guys on the team that, we work with, for that week to pull that conference off, the best. Like we have our own chat groups and we're talking all the time, breaking each other's chops and just looking forward to the next time, that we get together. Sometimes we get the opportunity to, assist with training as well down there. So it's just all around, it's a great opportunity, and I'm very grateful for that.
And the only way you were able to find those avenues was getting outside your department to do that.
Yeah, and that was it, like I said, our department was very, proactive. So when I came in, I wasn't here a week, and I was originally assigned to the truck, and the truck captain, he had just come back from ATROC with a couple other guys. And like I said, I had been there two or three shifts, and he looks at me and he goes, "You're going to ATROC next December." And I was like, "Wow." I'm like, "Really?" I'm like, "That's awesome. I've been here like not even a week yet, and already like you're lining me up to go to a conference." I'm like, "All right. Okay." It's a really, you kind of see what things are about at that point. You kind of see, where everybody's head is at, if that's like one of the first things they tell you, "All right, you're going to this conference." I thought that was really cool.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. You're one of the coordinators for the city of Spartanburg when it comes to training. So we all know, unfortunately, we have firefighters who, when training's mentioned, they're like, "Hey, I got an idea." They're all in, ready to do it. And then we have those that dread it, whether it's from training scars or just not wanting to go out there and train. What's your take on being 100% in when it comes to training? Because I get it. Days are going to be ebbs and flows. You had a bad night, your kid was up sick, you had to come into work. But regardless, when it comes to training on the job, what's your take on that?
So training, and like we mentioned earlier, fitness, like those are the foundations of what we need, what we need to be able to perform the way people are expecting us to. So yeah, I've always been, all in for the training, all in for the fitness. I've developed that discipline over the years, but like you mentioned, I mean, you do have ups and downs. Like some days it's just is bad, or like you had plans and then somebody completely wrecked those plans and you still try to, do at least something. But to, being all in is very important. And some people, that they want to, or on one day they don't want to the other, but that's never been, I'm in it to win it. I want to show up every day trying to do the best I can. May not always happen. Like I said, I am far from perfect. I'm just gonna have those days. But being given the opportunity to be a training coordinator, and like I said, we've got a great cadre of trainers. We got to jam up division chief of training and a training captain. They take really good care of us, so we kind of pass that along, to our personnel. When we sit down to develop our quarterly and our annual training is off duty, so we bring the shifts in to the academy for the whole day after they get off shift. So we're trying to produce something that's high quality, where they're going to get the reps that they need, and we're able to, teach them the points that we want them to remember and carry through to the fire ground. And sometimes we've bit off probably more than we should have, and in some cases it was too much, because obviously our group is very motivated, and we are out there to do as much as possible. But in that learning process comes the fact that not everybody else is out there to do as much as you want to do. And it's still a learning experience. It's still a work in progress to try to find that balance. Because I've always been that person, I'm coming out, I'm sending it. But not everybody wants to send it,
That's right.
and then they look at what you're doing and they say, "Yeah, I can't do that," or "I'm not going to do that." So you actually have a negative effect where maybe you didn't mean to, but it's not having a positive effect on either their fitness or their training. So trying to learn, that balance has been, a work in progress, and I'm getting better at it. I'm not saying I've got it down, but I'm thankful I've had a lot of, people out there, to talk to, about those things. John Spera being one of them. We've had some good conversations about those things and how to go about handling them. But still, bottom line, fitness is the foundation. Training is also part of that foundation in order to lift up the organization and move them in a forward manner.
And unfortunately, no matter how hard you try, no matter how much you may try to coddle or I don't want to say, I mean, I've heard of the term positive manipulation, however you want to look at it, there are just going to be some individuals who they're just not going to get aboard. They're not going to come aboard. They're not going to want to be part of the solution. And so at some point you just got to, for me, you just kind of wash your hands and continue doing what you can to affect others to see, because it's for the fire service, it's two things. It's physical fitness and training. You have to have one for the other. You can't be like, hey, I'm all in on training, but your physical fitness is not where it needs to be, and vice versa. So I think you hit it 100% on the nail on the head with finding that balance.
Sure. I mean, that's a conversation again that we have at the Recruit Academy. We're not trying to weed anybody out, but it's the process that does that. And we tell them straight up, say, look, this is not for everyone. But on the other hand, I follow that up by immediately saying, that's okay. You've come out here for a reason, right? Because you think this is what you want to do. And I think at, some point in all of our lives, we've all tried something. And then once we got into it, you know what? I don't think this is for me. And this is no different. So we tell them, like, look, it's not for everybody. There's no shame, but you got to figure it out.
No, that's 100%. I always like to ask the guests this last question. Where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it all up?
So, currently sitting at the rank of captain, there may be an opportunity to test for the position of battalion chief coming up in the near future. That's definitely, a rank that I would like to move up to. As a captain, we fill in for the battalion chief when the battalion chief is off. And it's funny, like I've had this conversation with people before. And we talk about the position. And my response is like being a fire company captain is awesome, right? Because you've got your crew, and we can worry about what's in these four walls today, and we can just do our thing. But then you're also a fire captain on the department level. And that can be very challenging because you're kind of caught between the floor and the office. And, that's where I had some, a lot of challenges. And, it makes you kind of reflect, makes you think, hey, is this where I want to stay? Or can I affect some more change? Do I have more influence moving up? And I think that's a thought that everybody needs to have when they're considering, do I test or do I not test? And I think the default answer is always to test, because even if you don't get the promotion, you have the experience of going through that process so that you know what it's like. And then from there, you can do with it, whatever you want. Say, okay, you know what? Not for me. I'm gonna hang out where I am. Or, hey, this really interests me. I'm gonna find some more things that are gonna help me kind of move up. So, I think, I would love the opportunity, to be battalion chief, a shift leader. I think I do bring a lot of things to the table for that. And I enjoy the days, even though I love riding the truck and being on the street. You know, I do appreciate every once in a while being able to ride the car and kind of act in that capacity. And then we'll just have to kind of see where it goes from there. I mean, I think I could see myself in a deputy chief or assistant chief role sometime in the future. I'm gonna be around for as long as I can be, or as long as they'll allow me to be. There's always that. But that's kind of where I see myself moving forward.
Okay. And how many more years would you like to put in before? I'm not sure what if South Carolina is different from North Carolina. I know North Carolina departments, except for, if I remember right, except for Charlotte, it's 30 years. So what's South Carolina?
So I like just missed it coming in. They used to be 25 years and then they moved it to 28. I would really love to see him go backwards, moving back to 25, because that's just, I mean, it's a lot. So obviously, coming in at 42 years old, if I wanted the full pension, I'll be 69, and I don't want to, say like, yeah, I'm making it all the way or not. But I mean, the intention is just keep moving forward one day at a time, and we'll take it just like that.
Love it. Love that adage. Absolutely. Okay. And in order to do that, though, you and I both know, taking it one day at a time, physical fitness has its place. It can take a back seat when you're sick, when you're feeling under the weather, but you can't let one day turn into 3 days, turn into 2 weeks, and then next thing you know, you've been out the physical fitness game for a while and it's starting to reflect that on the fire ground. So I 100% love how you stated that.
When you get older, it's definitely something to consider. And I've been plagued by injuries this past year. I did my right medial meniscus in September, and then in March I tore my left bicep tendon moving a 35-foot ladder. So I'm on light duty currently, but the whole time I've been doing what I've been able to do. For a long time I had a complete restriction on my left arm. Like, doctor says after surgery, don't lift anything, nothing, zero. Well, my right arm still works, so I'm still in the gym every morning, wearing out my right arm. I'm on the bike, I'm on the assault runner, going out to run, whatever. We have a training tower right outside our gym now, Firehouse. I think I sent you a few pictures. Up and down the tower, I can throw a sandbag on my right shoulder. I can go. So it's just that discipline that, hey, I can sit on my ass, drink bourbon and get fat while I'm recovering here, or I can stay on it so that once I am clear, like, I'm not that far behind where I was. It'll be a couple weeks, a month, throw some ladders, pull some hose, do some search drills, and I'll be back where I need to be, so I can contribute to my team.
I do have a little inquiry I want to ask. Your truck, you're on truck 62. What are the complements of ladders on that truck?
So on trucks, so we have truck 62 and we have tower 61.
Okay.
So we jump back and forth. The truck runs on the
Oh, okay.
residentials. The tower
Okay.
will take two commercial
Okay.
jobs. So on truck 62, we are running 224s, 216s, an 18, a 3-section 35. We have 2 7-foot VES ladders in the cross lays. On the tower, we run 235s. So we've got a 2-section 35, and we've got the 3-section 35, and that one's an Alkalite. I do not like pulling that one out of bed. We have they are just about to begin bending metal for our new TDA that hopefully we will see maybe December or January, and we have significantly increased the ladder complement on that vehicle just because of the construction that's going up and our limited access to Charlie side of apartment buildings, that are 4 and 5 stories now. But at least with the TDA, we can maneuver that truck into some very tight places where we know we can't get that mid-mount tower ladder. But we also added some 28s onto the TDA. So that'll give us just a little bit more reach, where we fall short with the 24s.
Absolutely. Okay. Love it. Love it. Jared, I thank you for coming on. You bailed me out in a situation where, I mean, things happened, but I was like, crap, I need to find somebody. And it just, everything worked out for a reason. So I just want to say thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you for taking time out of your day to spread the gospel, speak the truth about the fire service for anyone that wants to hear it. So hopefully you get back to 100% full capacity, where you can get on that truck and do what you do. But I just have to
That's the
say
goal.
thank you very much, sir.
Thanks for the opportunity, Danny. I really appreciate it. Love talking about, anything fire service. Love it.
Absolutely. All right, you have yourself a great day.
Thanks, brother.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.